This is, yet again, another tech podcast. No, that one's already taken. That's ATP. Have you ever listened to that one?
No.
Okay, do you know the application Overcast, which is a podcast app? Okay.
Nope.
You don't listen to podcasts.
Not many.
Why are you here?
I don't listen to any of them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So anyway.
I was invited.
That's right, I did. I invited.
And I accepted.
How gracious of you. Very kind.
I think I chose this date.
You did. No. Well, you chose
Wednesdays.
You chose Wednesdays. I chose September the 11th.
Good job, guy. Good job.
I chose Wednesday.
Yeah, and I chose
you
the
chose
11th.
This particular Wednesday.
Yeah, I chose this particular Wednesday. Okay, so this is yet another version of a podcast that started back in 2011. Back then, it was called South Geek Ramble and Review. And believe it or not, my wife actually came up with that title, and it just kind of stuck. We did about 63 or 64 episodes, I think. And then over the years, I've tried to bring it back, and I actually own SouthGeekNews.com. So that's what this is, South Geek News. And so, of course, you've got me, Donovan. I run South Tech Network Solutions, LLC. And then we've got Ben, who runs
Tifton Tech Works.
And we have Tyler, some dude we picked up off the side of the road. No, he's my son.
Hello.
And he's a techie, and that's all we'll say. All right. So I know the answer to this question from Tyler, and I probably know it from you. But did you?
Yeah, whatever you decide is fine. That'll be my opinion.
Did you watch the Apple event Monday?
No.
Yes.
Did you actually watch it?
Not by my own choice, but yes.
Oh, you were watching some streams?
Just some watch-alongs. I picked up a lot from the watch-alongs. I just tune into a random stream, and they're streaming it with their own opinions, and I go somewhere else, and they're streaming it with their own opinions. I'm like, I can't avoid this.
I actually try to watch all of them now. Now, I can say this. I do not watch them with the level of giddy enthusiasm that I did several years ago. There was just always something magical, even back, especially when Steve was still around,
yeah.
But they were completely different. These are all polished, produced because of COVID. And when they figured out that was the best way to do it, that's the only way they do them now. They just go ahead and pre-record everything. And I think it's better.
I don't.
I mean.
Well, the soul's gone.
Well, I mean, I guess that's.
It looks just like a giant televised press release.
That's fair because in some of the podcasts that Alex Lindsay, who's on several podcasts, he does some, anyway, look him up. But they always critique the shots because that's the industry that he's in. He's actually worked on like several of the Star Wars movies and stuff like that. And so these events, they'll start actually looking at how it was shot because the last several events were literally shot on an iPhone. Now, you have to look behind the curtain. It wasn't actually just the iPhone. It was all kind of rigging, all kind of lighting. They actually used the Blackmagic app, which is the best camera app available right now on an iPhone.
Which is funny that they didn't use one of their own apps.
Yeah, well, that's because their own app doesn't allow you the level of control that the Blackmagic app does.
Why not?
I don't know. Which, by the way, Blackmagic is now available on Android, too.
That's cool.
But I don't know. I kind of like it. But beyond that, so you don't know anything about what they announced.
I mean, I read that article that you linked to.
Oh, yeah, other than that.
Maybe I didn't. Yeah, I did read that.
Okay.
I didn't read them all, but I read that one.
So you got an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I have an iPhone. What model do you have?
I have the latest one.
The 15?
Yeah.
Pro or just?
It's Pro Max.
Pro Max. Oh, yeah. You went the granddaddy.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that actually the Pro?
They're comparing their phone sizes.
I mean, okay. See, mine's an iPhone 13, not a Pro.
And I still have to carry some spectacles.
Was, you know.
Because, you know, the Retina screens, the text stays at the same size. There's just more of a bigger screen.
Well, yeah, that's true. Now, Tyler, you have a Samsung.
I have the iPhone S22 Plus.
The iPhone S22 Plus.
manufactured in partnership with Samsung.
Yeah, right, right. So you are not an iPhone guy.
Never have, never will be.
Yeah, he and I always talk about that. So you're not really in where you need to upgrade. You're not really interested in upgrading necessarily. Okay.
Upgrade so there's in June.
So there's absolutely, so that's a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
You got that back in June.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So you're definitely not the target market then for this.
Not at all.
So there's absolutely nothing here that would make you go, you know what? I need to, I just upgraded this phone. I need to do it again.
I went from an 11 to this.
Oh God. Okay.
And so no, I mean, this is still new.
Okay.
I know some people who very likely will be getting the top of the line iPhone 16s as soon as they are available. Some people I used to work with.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. They always get the newest phones. Every time, like as soon as they're available, they get like the top of the line, the biggest ones you could possibly get.
You know, Apple actually has a program where I think, I forget how much you pay, but you pay so much per month, and every year, every 2 years, you automatically get the next phone.
Yeah, that these people don't like subscriptions.
Yeah.
If they can avoid them.
Well, you having an iPhone 15 Pro or Pro Max,
mm-hmm.
you will be able to utilize Apple Intelligence whenever it is finally released, which oddly enough, you know, they've made all this big brouhaha about the Apple Intelligence. It's, you know, Apple's way of doing AI. Now, to be fair, there's a little bit more to it than that. It is context sensitive. So that's where the whole Apple Intelligence is coming in. It's supposed to learn your phone, learn your habits so that you can say certain things and the new version of Siri will actually, you know, be able to pull that information in context in your phone. So you'll still be able to get the benefit of that.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be in version iOS 18. It's going to be in like 18.1 and only part of it.
Yeah.
So
I would assume that at the moment it's going to be hard to package the whole thing all out there at once.
But there was one thing that I thought was really cool. That the new Siri stuff can do is search. They demonstrated a search where it was basically like, hey, you ask your phone, hey, where was that one email where we talked about business deals? Or not even an email. It was like, hey, who did I discuss with and when was this thing about business deals? And it looks through your text messages or emails, anything it can get its grubby little fingers into, pops up and goes, hey, here was this message from Janet back in 2017.
Yeah.
That was actually pretty cool.
I could see a use for that because I remember having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where I had that conversation. Whether it was email, messages. I'm sure I don't use WhatsApp, but you know, any other app that you use, I could see that being useful because I have a lot going on in my head and I forget where I put things, where I had a conversation.
You have a lot going on in your head.
Well, I'm sure everybody does, but
no, yeah, I know.
I see that being useful. Not to rain on the parade, but I think Microsoft Copilot for Enterprise is going to have that capability to be able to search everything you have in the cloud, in your 365 environment. And it can check and find sensitive data and go, hey, you need to secure that, things like that. So it can help you with compliance. And
that sounds kind of neat, but who uses Microsoft Cloud anyways?
Most of my clients.
I do not like, I don't like Copilot itself as it is packaged in Edge and everything else on the desktop.
Yeah, I'm using the beta thing and the Windows 11.
Yeah.
Like today when ChatGPT was out to lunch or whatever, I can't serve it up right now. So I just hit the Copilot. And it wrote me a script.
I haven't really tried it like that. I'm accustomed to how it's integrated into Bing. Like if I do a search, which I had to flip over. I don't have Bing set as my default search. I actually have DuckDuckGo set as my default search.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm seriously, as far as the iPhone is concerned, I'm seriously looking at upgrading because I have a 13. Now I guess for you, the cameras really don't matter that much.
I wanted the LiDAR for 3D scanning.
That is a reason that a lot of people get iPhones, especially online with the increasing prevalence of VTubing.
Mm-hmm.
People get iPhones specifically for face tracking because it has LiDAR and the software is better.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get more fluid, realistic motion capture of your face. And it's really good now.
Well, I mean, that's been in iPhones for how many generations?
At least the 10.
Okay. I guess I really wasn't paying attention to that. I mean, I've got a couple of, you know, like whenever, what was it? Oh, it was before we replaced this, I think. And we were, Devin was talking about some of the apps that I could use the phone to scan and maybe do some kind of 3D printing for a bracket or something.
Yeah.
I forget. But instead, I just, you know.
For reference, Donovan was pointing at the air conditioner.
Yeah.
On the wall.
Yes, that's right. This is great, great audio. Yeah, there's a mini split in here that I had replaced about a year or so ago. I forget how many. It might be 2 years old, but.
This wasn't, the one on the wall here wasn't the one that leaked, was it? That was the old one.
That was the old one.
I helped move all the crap around.
Yeah, that's been years and years ago. This is the one I actually bought straight from Pioneer down in Florida.
Yeah, that happened after I wasn't here anymore.
Yeah, that's right. After you moved. So 2 years ago, maybe. I think it's been about 2 years ago because one of my clients actually did the install for me.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember hearing about that after the fact.
Yeah. Well, the last time you were here or the time before is when I got the Wi-Fi module. So I actually control it with a busted ass piece of shit app on my phone. But
remember, when we put the Wi-Fi thing in there, it fixed the thermostat somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, because the thermostat was crazy. Well, I'm still considering it. I'm not 100% sold on whether or not I need to go with the 16. I'm going with a Pro this time. I can't justify the max because 6.9 inches, that's how big. Yours is 6.7.
I mean.
Yeah. The new one is 6.9.
I drop it a lot.
Okay, wait a minute.
On the ground.
I need to see if it fits into this pocket on my TrueWorks pants.
Not sponsored, by the way.
They do.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Mine aren't embroidered like that. They just have.
Yeah, well, these are actually TrueWorks. This is a brand. You don't have the, your TrueWorks?
I have one pair, and I'm not wearing them right now.
What? No shit.
Yeah.
But you don't have TrueWorks on yours? Huh.
No, they're blank.
How does it compare to my phone?
Sorry actually. For the listeners.
we're comparing phone sizes.
We have our three phones sitting side by side on the table to compare the sizes.
I need another phone so I can take a picture. No, I actually do have one in my bag.
Just pick up my tablet and take a picture. It's okay. Actually, like, the S22 Plus is actually pretty close in size to, what iPhone did you say you had?
The 15.
Yeah, it's pretty close in size to the 15.
15 Pro Max.
Yeah.
15 Pro Max.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think mine's like a 6.2, I think. I can't remember. It's a 13. Now, knowing that, I'm starting to reconsider. I may want to actually get a 16 Pro Max, but God, that's...
The Samsung Galaxy S22 Plus is... It says 6.2, but I don't know if that is accurate because Google likes to lie to people nowadays. 6.6.
Okay.
Diagonal is 6.6.
They also added this new camera control.
The brand new button.
And I'm not sure I'm all that sold on it. Tyler and I were talking. That's going to play hell with case makers.
Not because it's a new button. Case makers have been adding slots for buttons
because
since cases.
It's pressure sensitive.
It's got sapphire on the top of it where it's
not just a push down kind of button. You slide your finger over the button, which means you're going to need more space to put a finger in there instead of it being like the case I have on my Galaxy S22 Plus here has covers on the buttons to protect them from falls and stuff. I've seen iPhone cases where they just have a cutout for this kind of might date some things when it had the silent switch.
You mean like this one?
Oh, the 13 still has it, yeah.
Yeah, the 13 still has it. They removed it, I think, in the 14 or the 15.
Yeah, something like that. They'll have to do something similar for the camera control because it's touch sensitive. You have to move your finger along it. So if it's too cramped around it, your finger's going to get stuck. You won't get the full range of motion.
Right.
But if it's too big, then you have a giant target for gravel and pebbles and stuff to get in.
Apple is making their own cases for these that apparently do something. I forget exactly what they said, but it's not a cutout. It's actually something that goes over it. And I think the case itself has sapphire in that little area or something so that it can be pressure. It can be sensitive.
Sounds expensive.
Well, it's Apple. I mean, freaking watch bands are $50. So, but aside from that, I don't really care about the camera control button. I want the better cameras. That's also the reason why I want to go with a pro model instead of this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also keeping this one because I have a Mac Mini over there. And of course, I've got this MacBook Air, and this thing is one hell of a good webcam. I mean, it's the best webcam I've owned. So if I can keep it, then I just have a new phone. This, you know, can do double duty. So that's the thinking. But now that you've got me thinking about the Pro Max, I mean, it starts at $1,199 for the 256 gig, well, $1,099 for the Pro that's 256 gig. And I've got to stick with 256 gig because this is a 256 that I already have on the iPhone 13.
I mean, you have to stick with at least 256.
At least, yes. Which, I mean, I'm not using that much, but then again, the new phone supports the 4K 120 and all this other stuff, so I may wind up eating into the storage.
Very space-hungry features.
Yeah. They also introduced the new Series 10 watch. Big freaking deal. I've got a Series 9. I see no reason to upgrade.
But it's the lightest, thinnest, largest display on an Apple Watch ever.
Yeah, and they did something with the display. I forget what they call it, but basically it's supposed to help with a multi-OLED or something where the angle, you can see it better, like instead of having to be right on it, you can see it better from different side views and what have you. Okay, whatever. The Ultra 2, they come up with a different matte black color for the Ultra 2,
mm-hmm.
which, okay, this is, I told my wife, I was like, okay, that's a nice watch. It's probably too big for my wrist. But it's $800 is the big thing that stops me from getting an Ultra 2. So you don't have it. Do you have a Apple Watch?
No. I had a Series 2.
Wow.
When it was new.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not life-changing. It wound up in a drawer, and then my daughter borrowed it, and nobody's seen it in a couple of years.
It's sad to say, and something, like you say, it's not life-changing. I use my watch for timers
mm-hmm.
and to control my phone for stopping and starting a podcast when I'm in the car. That's on my, so basically it's a, oh, and the other cool thing is if you're trying to shoot video with the back camera, and let's say you're trying to shoot yourself with the phone, not a mm-hmm. gun, but the camera
can get a preview of kind of where
you're well, it's not. Yeah. Well, it's actually complete control. You can stop and start and you yeah. can. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Those three things, other than seeing what time it is, maybe the temperature occasionally.
Well,
that's it.
No, you look at message notifications.
I do. It will. Yeah. It dings and shit out of me.
Yeah. And when you start receiving a phone call and your phone's in your pocket, you'll look at your watch to see who's calling.
Yeah. Cause I have my phone on vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
So my phone doesn't ring, but my watch does, which was kind of funny because I'd taken my watch off yesterday afternoon when we were working on the toilet
mm-hmm.
and I kept trying. I was down, crouched down on my hands and knees working on the thing. And I kept feeling something and I was like, oh, that's right. I'm not wearing the watch and the phone is just buzzing. It's in my pants pocket. So I was like, oh yeah. Okay. So four or five things. But again, like you say, not life changing.
Yeah. So. I did say just last week, I missed my watch. It's an election season. Everybody's getting unsolicited calls.
I'm getting unsolicited texts.
Oh yeah. I get those too. But when my phone rings, that's the business line.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big house. I just happened to walk out of a room across the house
mm-hmm.
doing some phone ring. So I zip across all the way to the house just to go. And I could have just.
Yeah, if you had your watch,
right
let
there
it
on
go.
My watch.
Yeah.
But that's not worth hundreds of dollars.
Nobody really
all
knows.
All it cost me was like 4 calories.
Nobody really knows who I am, so I don't really get much in the ways of political calls or texts. Recently, I've been getting calls and texts in Spanish.
I had my phone set to silence any call, any number that's not in my phone.
I've told my phone. I saw last night that option is turned on, mm-hmm. and I still get the phone ringing with some number out of Oklahoma, and it says potential spam, and I think, why is it still ringing?
It's not supposed to. It's supposed to silence
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But you might know who they are. You
might not want to find out.
I mean, if they're not in your contacts, it's not actually supposed to ring.
Nope.
Because I enabled mine about 2 weeks ago, and it was working. But then we had to go to a client, and I needed to make sure that if he was going to try to call me, because I knew I didn't have his number in the phone, so I had to turn it off. And like this coming Friday, we're having a roll-off container dropped. Well, they're supposed to call me at 11 or after. I don't have their phone number in my phone because I don't know if it's going to come from the business or if it's going to come from the driver, you know? So I was like, well, I need to turn that off. But, oh, man, that is a godsend, because I will literally be sitting there at 8:30 at night, 9 o'clock, and my phone goes on to do not disturb about 5 o'clock now. I did have it set for around 8:30. But I'll be sitting there, and I'll get a call from somebody in Alabama. And I'm like, I don't know anybody in Alabama, you know? So, and I know it's not a client, because I definitely don't serve Alabama. For the right price, I might, but...
I mean, I threatened to fly across the country to fix something before, as long as people come to my flight. they didn't like that.
They didn't like that.
So one last thing on the Apple Watch Series 10 versus the Series 9. Apple's like boasting how it's the biggest screen ever on an Apple Watch.
Yes.
It's 1 millimeter larger.
But that 1 millimeter.
It is the biggest ever.
Yeah. That is a millimeter.
Technically speaking.
At just
the largest.
At arm's length, you put both of them on your wrist, most people will not be able to tell the difference.
You know what? I'm about to say this, but I'm going to say it, and I'm going to keep it in the show. Apple is starting to sound very Trumpian. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Moving on. All right.
In the history of Apple.
It's the largest. Well, think about it. Every year, this is the best iPhone we've ever made. Well, of course, you know.
Nobody else makes iPhones.
I mean, like today, I'm older today than I've ever been.
Yep.
You know,
you're older now than you were when this podcast started.
Exactly. And I'm starting to feel it.
See, I saw something when they announced the iPhone 16 Pro, I think it was, and they had like the nice 3D render or whatever, the very high quality render of the phone, with all the lights and everything. Like, it's the best thing they've ever made. And they're like, we have the thinnest bezels around the screen of any iPhone. And somebody, the person I was watching the stream of, they looked at that, they paused the stream and went, it looks exactly like my iPhone 15 Pro.
Yeah.
The bezels are like a fraction of a millimeter smaller.
Well, Marquez Brownlee, MKBHD, he did a quick hot take video on it after the fact. And he said the same thing, but he said when he got his hands on the actual phone and looked at it, he said, I can see the difference, but... That was pretty much it.
But in everyday life, is it going to matter having one more millimeter of screen at most versus the 15? You're not going to get maybe like one extra character of text on your screen. No one's going to notice.
Maybe not a character, but well, in a Retina screen, how big is a pixel?
Tiny.
How many can you fit in a millimeter?
I don't know. That data's probably out there.
Which, that's the thing. Pixel resolution doesn't really matter so much anymore. It's the pixel density. Because text looks so good on high density displays.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you finally got a 4K display, that's like a 32 or 28?
32.
Even it, like Windows runs at a high DPI mode, like 125 DPI, text looks so good.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back to a regular standard DPI display and it looks like you're looking through bricks.
You mean the one that's right next to it?
Yes.
Yeah. I have a 32 main and then that's a 24. And so if I drag anything from this nice 32 over to that 24, I can definitely see the difference in the DPI. It's just the pixels is, I just haven't bitten the bullet to get a second 32 yet.
I bought a truck. There's no way I'm getting new models.
Yes, I understand.
I got two 28 4Ks, so like it's the same resolution, but the pixels are even more dense.
Mm-hmm.
Text looks so good. I think I have it running at 150 DPI, or 150%, rather.
Right. All right.
Text looks so good from a code editor. It's so nice to look at. Then I have a 43-inch 4K display right next to it, with a much, much lower pixel density. So I drag something over, and it just gets 2 times larger. But it's still 4K.
Yeah, that was something that even Marquez brought up about the display is, for some reason, iPhone still is only 60 hertz. They don't make a 120 on the screen.
The Pro Max, though.
No. As far as I know, based on everything I've read and according to what he said in his little hot take.
It still feels like 60.
They're still 60.
I remember seeing that like when they announced the regular one, it didn't do it. Well, okay, here, Apple 16 Pro and Pro Max tech specs, ProMotion technology with adaptive refresh rates up to 120 hertz, HDR.
Well, maybe he meant the base model. The base models don't.
Yeah, the base model's still 60.
He said 16, though. I don't know about the 15. It still kind of feels like 60 when I'm...
Yeah, I don't know about the 15s, but...
I don't think the 15 is.
I think I have to know.
My S22 Plus is 120 hertz, and it has been for years. It's actually a really good experience.
You know, I was going to ask you if how that does compare, because I've never used a phone that's over a 60.
Well,
you know,
here, just drag left and right on the home screen, just with your thumb.
Okay,
see how smooth that is.
Yeah, that is smooth.
I didn't know that my screens at my office were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So my son got a new monitor.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I need to go to
240 hertz.
Yeah, I was like. Why?
Do it again. I've set it to 60. Same phone, same experience. It feels awful, doesn't it?
It does. It feels jagged.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
So he got it home and hooked it up, and he's like, this is not doing right. So I was like, all right, well, I guess we just go change it in the display settings. I've never visited changing the refresh rate.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had that need. I'm not a gamer.
Mm.
I don't support any gamers.
Mm-hmm.
But he flipped it up to 240, and all of a sudden the mouse is incredibly smooth moving across the screen. I was like, I'll go look at mine. I don't have that. I don't have that capability on my 427s.
See, and that's something, if you really think back, that we lost when we went to LCDs. Back when we all used CRTs,
mm-hmm.
just jack that up to 8,500, 120 hertz.
Yeah.
Mouse look, the mouse movement felt real. Like the mouse was a physical object,
mm-hmm.
because the PS2 inputs were so low latency. The monitor had zero delay.
Mm-hmm.
The frame rates were so good. There was no ghosting. It felt like you were moving a physical object inside the screen.
Mm-hmm.
We went to LCD and we went, the 60 hertz flicker doesn't hurt anymore. But we were now stuck at 60 hertz for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Even though most of the 24-inch monitors that I buy for clients,
mm-hmm.
the Scepters, they're 72.
Which is, I know monitors, like my...
72 or 75.
My Dell 19-inch 5.4 monitor from 2006 will do 75 hertz. I never noticed a difference.
Yeah. That 4K back there, I think, is doing 60.
Probably.
Because I mean, it's a Scepter, so it's not like top of the line. I didn't want to fork out $500-$700 for a 4K 120 or whatever. But.
My 228s will do 144. And
do you run them at 144?
Not regularly. I'll set it to 120 whenever I play certain games.
Yeah.
Well, games that the computer can actually run at higher than 60. And like Minecraft, for example, look great. Half-Life looks great. It just looks so good when you set it to that, as long as the display stays running.
7 days to die.
Doesn't run it. That thing barely gets three frames a year. Now, that game is impressive on how much it can tax your computer. My computer has a GTX 3090 Ti in it, and it will 100% that card, looking at a freaking workbench in the game.
And for Ben and everybody else, that's a badass card.
my son's got a decent NVIDIA card. I can't tell you what it is. It's a Ti after the numbers.
Also, this is on medium settings on this game.
Okay.
He was happy running Fortnite at, I think he approached 300 FPS.
I mean,
nice.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
A toaster can run Fortnite at a passable frame rate.
That's all he wanted, was to get Fortnite smoother. And now he doesn't play Fortnite.
Well, also, what to continue this tangent, that you used to have a Dell laptop, 2006. The XP, not XPS, but it was the first widescreen laptop I had.
Yeah.
I forget what it was. But it had like an ATI graphics card in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would run Half-Life 2 at like 200 frames per second in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing because me and my brother, we would play Garry's Mod.
Yeah.
Before it was, you had to pay for it. At, you know, easily more than 100 frames per second,
right,
all the time in 2006. And it feels like things have just gotten slower over time.
It does. It does. I mean, I'm doing good. I forget. I can't remember what model. Because I tend to stay away from NVIDIA. I go with AMD. And so I've got the same card. I built my wife's machine over there. I'm pointing back behind me because we're in the studio / office. The only game we really play is World of Warcraft, and it still probably hits around about 90 frames per second on a good day. And, of course, frames per second went down when I put it on the 4K monitor. So, anyway.
I wonder why that happened.
Yeah. So, next story is, cars are rolling computers now, so what happens when they stop getting updates? So, and for transparency, I summarized these articles so I could read them, and then we could talk about them. Yes, that's a
chat. For transparency, several of these, I only read your synopsis.
Okay, that's fine. Well, we can thank ChatGPT for that. So in 2022, Jake Brown from Tennessee bought a used 2017 Volkswagen Passant and excited about its internet-enabled features. Okay, has anybody really been excited about internet-enabled features on a car?
My trial is gone. I'm not paying extra for that.
Oh, did it have like Wi-Fi?
It's got Google Maps in it. Yeah, it's got a, I think it's 5G connection, Wi-Fi, and Google Maps is built. Yeah. It runs Android on the infotainment.
So it's probably Android Auto or whatever that is. Because you have CarPlay.
That's got CarPlay.
So it's got CarPlay and that?
Or Android.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
See, Android Auto is a little bit different. Because like CarPlay, you attach your phone to it. Android Auto, you attach your phone to it. If it's Android on the dash, that's not Android Auto.
Right.
But it's automotive Android.
Okay. All
right. Naming.
It's better than that crappy piece of shit that Microsoft Sync is in my Ford Focus 2013. Thank you very much. He soon discovered that some of these features, including remote start, stopped working due to AT&T discontinuing its 3G service, which Volkswagen used for connectivity. And this issue affected several Volkswagen models built between 2014 and 2019, leaving drivers without access to services like remote start, emergency assistance, and crash notification. Despite promises of a solution, these services remained unavailable 2 years later. Volkswagen is not alone. Hyundai, Nissan, General Motors, and Stellantis have also faced similar challenges. As cars become more like smartphones on wheels with sophisticated software, the question arises about how long automakers will support these updates. Unlike smartphones, which receive updates for about 7 years, cars need to function and potentially improve for much longer, as the average age of cars on U.S. roads is now 12.6 years. This discrepancy highlights the need for a long-term strategy in automotive software maintenance. I was not thinking about Volkswagen or General Motors or Nissan or any of these when I first saw this. I thought about Tesla, but
not going to be an issue.
Yeah, why? Because nobody's going to buy Teslas. Anyway. But my wife, whenever I got my Ford Focus, because of just the little bit of electronics that it has in it, she nicknamed it Cal, Computer on Wheels. Now, it does not get any kind of wireless updates or anything like that. Matter of fact, I think I've done one update to it, to the Sync system.
Didn't you do that over USB?
I had to do it over USB. Okay.
Which is fine.
That's fine.
Also, for comparison's sake, the previous vehicle was a 2003 Ford Explorer with absolutely no fancy technology in it. It has a cassette player and analog dials in the dash. So that was the comparison between that and the 2013 Ford Focus. That's why it seemed like space age technology.
Yeah. So that's the newest vehicle I own. So I don't have anything that has to have any kind of internet enabled updates or what have you. But I mean, it does bring up, like they pointed out, you know, you went from an iPhone 11 to a 15. That's a time span of what? When did the 11 come out? 2017, 2016, something like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So you really pushed yours to the limit, probably.
I usually do, yeah.
Yeah. So say 5 to 8 years for you.
2019.
2019? Really?
September 2019 is when the 11 came out.
I bought it. And like the next month, 12 came out and the price of the 11 dropped $100.
Yeah,
of course.
So yeah, that's when I bought it.
Apple was specifically waiting on you to buy the 11.
And I helped them along their way.
Let's say 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 5 years. Every 5 years we can replace a smartphone. Okay. I can't replace the car every 5 years. That's not economical. And if it's not getting software updates, you know, they say 12.6 years. you own a 2003 Ford Ranger. We have a 2003 Explorer and a 2013 Ford Focus, and I'm in no way looking at buying any kind of new vehicle in the next probably 5 years. I'm probably not going to get another vehicle until I'm 60, which is 6 years from now. So, okay, 5 years, yeah. Damn.
But you didn't just buy one.
No, I didn't just buy one.
Yeah. So 5 more years.
Yeah, 5 more years. This is a problem. This is a problem. And I don't know what Volkswagen's going to do about if their system relied on 3G, those modems that would be in the car would probably are not software upgradable to LTE or 5G anything. So that would require someone to take a vehicle into a service to the dealer to do any kind of software updates.
Change that out and reprogram it.
Yeah.
Presuming that that they designed it in such a way that the cellular connectivity module was replaceable in an agnostic kind of way.
Yeah.
Because if the car computer was designed to specifically talk 3G, like protocol commands to the modem, which is not unusual, then you pop in a 4G, 5G modem and it's going to get very confused.
Why is it going to have to upgrade firmware to talk to the thing?
Presuming that they still make firmware for that vehicle. Like how long is a manufacturer required to make firmware for their vehicle?
I don't know.
I always
thought that they had to maintain a parts inventory for 10 years after manufacturing.
10 years isn't long enough.
Yeah, I don't think that's long enough, though.
Just think about it. You buy a vehicle now that has 5G connectivity, works great. Well, what happens in 15, 20 years when that vehicle's still on the road and you have to, and it no longer can, it won't connect to the 5G anymore because they've sunsetted in favor of 17G.
I mean,
even though it's paid off, I think everything I've got is fully insured, full coverage. So I just drive it off a bridge if I like it.
Well, I was going to point out, you've got basically sort of a computerized tractor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any connectivity.
No, but still, at what point, I mean, what's the lifespan of a tractor? 20 like 40 years?
Or 45 years?
100 years, depending.
So how long, and it's a John Deere, so how long is John Deere going to support, you know, do they have to do firmware updates? Do they have to do some kind of computer controlled stuff?
No, I'm sure I'll figure it out and rip all that stuff off and make sure it runs.
It also depends on how right to repair goes in the next several years.
John Deere is not going to play that game.
Not unless they're forced to.
Yeah.
But one thing about this is there's two separate issues here. There's software updates for the car,
mm-hmm.
but there's also the car's dependence on third-party services.
That's true.
Because if you have a car that runs some software created now, and it doesn't use any external connectivity, mm-hmm. that software will work just the same in 25 years. It's isolated inside the car.
Yeah, I mean, the Microsoft Sync works just as well today as it did in 2013. It's busted.
Yeah, i.e. not well.
Not well.
But the connectivity to third-party services is where it really has the problem. Like the whole 3G issue.
Yeah.
They built it and designed it for access to AT&T's 3G network.
Ooh, yeah.
So let's say AT&T went belly up. Well, first off, that'd be terrible.
But
let's say that that they bound it to some other smaller company because they got a better deal on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then most companies these days don't last more than 5 years anyway. So they're using that, and then that company goes belly up and gets sold to somewhere else, and they shut down their data services. All those cars can now suddenly no longer access the internet or the cloud because that's what they're doing. They're connecting to the cloud so that you can open your phone and go crank car.
Yeah.
Well, what happens when, even if those data services are available, let's say you're using 5G, let's say 5G works for 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when those cloud services that they're connecting to go the way of the dodo? The car can still connect to the cellular networks. You're still paying for the data plan on it, but the cloud services go away. And, oh, well, it looks, 2 years ago, they stopped making firmware updates for your car.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
It's very reminiscent of when companies start taking servers offline for certain games. It's like, I still have it on my PC, but I can't play it because it's got to reach out and touch a server somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? Even if it's not an online type game necessarily where you're playing against others. I don't know. I mean, I never would have thought we'd have this problem with cars.
Well, because see, there's something else. And what you're talking about, the whole video game thing, is we're starting to get to the point where the question is being asked more and more, at what point do companies have to give up the rights to the software that they're using things? Because take cars, for example. You are allowed to repair your own vehicle. You're allowed to purchase replacement parts. and swap them out on your own vehicle. At what point does that start extending to components of software? Because you can open up an engine, change your spark plugs, replace a head gasket, and so on just fine.
I don't think I can I don't think I can replace the TCM.
No, maybe not. Depends. But at what point, like with this, everything's being software controlled, at what point are you, does it become the case where they have to give you access to the software components and software modules for you to replace as necessary?
Yeah, because if they're not going to do it.
Yeah, this is, of course, nothing's, no, this hasn't been broached before.
Yeah. This reminds me of the issue we have with EVs and the fact, and Ben, you and I have talked about this, I think, before. And I know Tyler and I've talked about it, is the infrastructure. You know, and you've got two competing, I guess, standards, even though most of the companies now are trying to go with Tesla's connection. Yeah. But even still, you've got an infrastructure problem. It's like I'm not against innovation. I'm not against technological advancements, but at some point, you know, it's nice to be able to just go out and put a key in your car and crank it up and go. And not have to worry about the fact that I can't get in my car now because the app that controls me being able to unlock my doors, I'm being a little facetious, but not so much because that kind of stuff's actually happened with Cybertrucks, you know, can't get into the vehicle and that type of thing. But
I think James May had that problem. He had a Model S and the computer is controlled or powered by a 12-volt lead acid battery. And he's got a lot of cars, so sometimes they sit up for a while.
Yeah.
Well, that battery died, and he couldn't get in the car. And then he couldn't get to the battery to connect a charger to it.
Oh, God.
And he had a big gripe about it. I think he was right.
Wow. It kind of reminds me of Tyler and I have these discussions, too. It's like, you know, I have Wi-Fi connected thermostats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, Wi-Fi is okay, but these aren't just Wi-Fi. You can't connect and use these if the internet's down because they have to go, your app on the phone has to go out.
Yeah, your phone doesn't talk to the thermostat.
No, it
talks to the cloud.
Yeah. Just like these lights in here. These lights, now, initially, whenever I put these lights in, and these are used by these little, what's it called, Govee or whatever, little Wi-Fi-enabled outlets.
Hmm.
And I use an app on my phone called, I will bring it up, called GoSmart. Now, if the internet is down, then I can still, in here, I can still turn the lights on and off. Now, originally I couldn't, so somewhere along the line they changed it. But my schedules don't work because my schedules are controlled by their cloud services. So there have been instances where, you know, we've got these storms coming through and the lights go, the power goes off at, say, 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. I'll come out here and none of my lights will be on because the schedule can't turn them on because the internet was down or what have you.
Or even the more common case where, oh, well, you know, the cable modem's offline for some reason.
Yeah.
Or maintenance is going on or other reasons the internet service can go down. And it's like, well, the lights aren't turning on automatically or turning off automatically.
Yeah. So as cool as it is to be able to, you know, sit in my house and turn these lights on before I get out here or have them automated, they come on, I think, at 6 o'clock every morning. I mean, sometimes it is a hindrance.
My BMW has a 3G connection or
had
at one time.
Yeah.
It was all over before I bought it. But I think it would, I've got some kind of assistance button I've never used. But it's BMW's.
Their version.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
But I think I got a letter or something like that about, hey, that's not going to work after December of, 22, when they 3G shut down. And I didn't miss a beat. I mean, I don't get over-the-air updates.
Yeah.
I don't have remote start or anything. So
right.
I still have to put the key in the column like like Fred Flintstone had to do.
I had a coworker who, he had remote start in his car, but it was from the fob. You had, as long as you were within like 8 feet of the car, you just push a button, the car cranks up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this new truck's got it. But I can also start with app from the back of the grocery store.
See, here's another thing about all these cloud-connected cars. I don't want my vehicle to be connected to the cloud. Because if you look at the news, every couple of weeks there's a data breach or someone hijacking something. I do not need some data breach happening. They get the secret keys on how to communicate with my car, and then they shut it off while I'm driving down the highway.
Yeah.
I do not need...
That's a legitimate concern. I wouldn't say cause for fear, but it's a concern.
Yeah.
It's not impossible.
Yeah.
And you know what? You can't do any of that on a 2003 Ford Ranger. It has an AM/FM radio. That's the only kind of connectivity it's got.
Yeah. You know, I do know what happens if you don't go crank it up once a month.
Mm.
You're jumping it off. I went to get in it the other day to, this is a couple, it was probably 3-4 weeks back now, to go fill up the gas can for the lawnmower. I get out there, you know, open the door, put the key in, the dash lights, you know, it ding, ding, ding. I go to turn it. Nothing.
You go, okay,
just goes, enough to greet you and then die.
Exactly. Yeah. And this battery has already been replaced in the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what it was is I just wasn't driving it enough because all it took was I jumped it off. I drove it to the gas station, did not turn it off because I wanted to make sure and drove it back and then shut it off, cranked it back up, shut it off, cranked it back up. No problem. So now I make sure about every 2 to 3 days I go out there and crank it up and let it run for at least 2 minutes and then I turn it back off.
We could just get like a solar charger for it just to keep it topped up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a maintainer.
Yeah.
Would waste a lot less gas.
He kind of couldn't take his truck with him, so.
Yeah. Well, I could.
Yeah, but
I mean,
it's full within my ability to take it with me, but.
Give the airline enough money. Well,
I can have it shipped.
There's services that will drive it out there or carry it out there.
When I first looked at that, having it mailed across the country was going to cost about as much as the value of the vehicle at the time. That's no longer the case because vehicle prices are still elevated.
Yeah, that's true.
But still, you know, it costing $4,000 to $5,000 to mail a vehicle across the country.
That sounds funny. Mail the vehicle.
To then spend $300 a month on a parking spot for it, where I walk everywhere I go.
Yeah. Or you use public transit.
Which, I mean, those cases where I use public transit, I could just drive instead.
Yeah.
It would cut down on my travel time, but the gas is way...
The gas and like you said, the parking spot, it just doesn't make economic sense.
Oh.
I mean, entertainment on public transit sometimes worth the money and the extra time.
On public transit where I'm at, it's like $3. So I mean, like,
and you get a show sometimes.
Rare, in my case, it's rarely, unless there's a sports game going on and I forgot that there was a sports game going on and I get into a bus and I'm like, why is everyone wearing the same shirt? why are we packed in like sardines?
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, I don't like how externally connected cars are becoming as they're becoming more software controlled. I don't have an issue with software controlled cars by default.
Yeah.
Like even in the early to mid 2010s, your throttle is not directly attached to a steel cable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Your throttle control is a digital signal. Like for your 2013 Ford Focus, your throttle it just sends a signal over the CAN bus to the ECM. The ECM goes, oh, cool. You're pushing the throttle. Your brake pedal, those still have to be attached.
Right.
But I think legally for safety, they have to be attached to some form of backup brake. Where, like, EVs even still have to have a mechanical brake.
I was going
to
ask, do you think the Cybertruck, because the Cybertruck, as far as steering, has steer-by-wire.
You know,
so does your car.
If they can disconnect
the car has steer-by-wire?
It certainly feels like it, at least.
Mm. If they can disconnect the steering wheel from the front rack,
mm-hmm.
Why not the brakes?
Because being able to stop is more important.
That particular module goes on the fritz. Now my brakes don't work.
Yeah, see, with EVs, they have a hybrid brake where the brake pedal first hits a sensor. There's a sweeping range on the sensor that says, slow the vehicle down.
Yeah.
And if you bottom out the brake pedal, it hits a second thing where it pulls a cable.
So it's got a mechanical brake.
They're supposed to. The ones I've seen, they have that. I think even the like Teslas do that.
Yeah.
Because if the vehicle suddenly loses all drive power, you need to be able to stop it.
If Ben would have just gone ahead and gotten his Cybertruck like he was
then we could make so much fun of you
put
right
it
now.
In a lake.
Well, it'd be rusting out in the driveway right now.
Yeah, because it's raining.
It's raining.
It'd be rusting in the bottom of the lake.
But yeah, I have an issue with the, like, not all of that, but it's the cloud connectivity.
Yeah.
In a, especially not only the cloud connectivity, but especially in a way that is not adjustable or controllable by us.
Well, that in, like, they tied it to 3G. And the problem there is you can't say, well, they should have been more forward looking, because at the time when they did that,
3G was the best you had.
3G was the best you had. And so how can you create something that's going to be so agnostic that it doesn't matter?
Quite easily.
I mean, what is that? I mean, because nobody, do any of the cell phone companies run any kind of 1G stuff or 2G stuff anymore?
No. Amps was shut down.
I mean, can we do it with that SMS? I'm being facetious.
Remember, 1X got shut down the same time, right around the same time the 3G was sunset.
Yeah, that's true.
And so 1X, 2G got shut down a long time ago. GMRS.
Yeah.
It got shut down a long time ago. And then 3G got sunset. And around the time they were sunsetting 3G, they sunset AMPS, which is 1X or /1G. It had several names.
Yeah.
So no one operates that in the United States anymore, except under dire emergency situations. And so 4G is pretty much the lowest you can connect at.
Mm. But if you tied something to 4G today, where are
you
we?
That would not be a good move.
Yeah. Well,
because there's already 5G.
Yeah.
And they're talking about another.
They're working on like 6G or something.
I don't think they're actually working on 6G at this point, because 5G is not even fully rolled out yet.
Well, what I mean was when I was working on it, I mean, it's like right now, the iPhone 16 is the new hotness. They're already working on the 17 and the 18 at Apple.
Also consider what they did with LTE, 4G LTE.
Yeah.
They had 4G LTE as the base spec, and then they had several specification updates. LTE Advanced, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
LTE Advanced was an improvement over 4G. It was incompatible with older 4G equipment, but but devices that could use 4G or LTE Advanced could make use of the increased bandwidth. It was still 4G. They iterated on it.
And I think that's what AT&T was trying to pass off as 5G.
5GE.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, fuck you. but you can build something in a way that it's data connectivity, the core car computer that's doing all the stuff, that when it goes, oh, I need to send a message to the internet,
mm-hmm.
it has no idea how that's actually happening. It could be pixies and fairies for all it knows. You build it so that the interface between the CPU and the data module has a fixed set of functions.
Yeah.
And then any module you can build to that interface, and it will be able to do it.
Well, at least make the radio communication module changeable.
Yeah. I mean, we do that in laptops.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's just PCI Express.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Either of you read that Verizon is looking at creating a, I don't know if it's a competitor to Starlink, but they are looking at satellite communications.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't read that, but that does not surprise me.
Yeah, so they're trying to enter that area. And
but why?
Because everyone else is.
Because it's the thing to do.
They got 5G, though.
We're not going to get in a talk about how Elon Musk makes things happen, and then people go, oh, shit, we should have been doing that. But if we were to create a standard for that,
mm-hmm.
we could. I don't think that would go away. That wouldn't be.
It would eventually.
I mean, protocols would be upgraded and whatnot, but for some legacy services, they could keep those on.
Well, I mean,
on the satellite. So if you connect the vehicle to that,
you're not
relying on so many towers, but fewer satellites.
I mean,
for that kind of communication,
it would really depend on what bands are used. Because all those low Earth orbit constellations can't use the same frequencies.
Yeah, they'd figure that out.
And we already, historically, we've had a huge problem with cellular services. Like, oh, well, this device supports AT&T's bands, but not Verizon's. And it supports half of T-Mobile's, like a third of that one random European one.
They're getting that worked out.
And so nowadays, pretty much all of them support all of them.
Yeah.
Which is great. But for satellite, you would need to have like a fixed set of bands for that. Because instead of like, oh, well, I'm going to use this band and this band and that one and that one and that one, and you have six different satellite companies all using 12 different bands, and
mm-hmm.
your car only works on three of them, and
create one standard for automotive.
Yeah, good luck.
Or
Ben is such an optimist.
Yeah, well, I'll never be president.
Also, what you were thinking of, Ben, was Verizon teaming up with satellite service provider Skylo. That was earlier.
Never read that name, Skylo. But
Skylo?
Again, I only.
They're launching.
I scroll headlines. I don't scroll articles.
they're launching direct to device messaging, you know, like Apple does with the whole satellite messaging. Verizon is apparently trying to do the same thing.
Okay. I did read, even though this is kind of off topic, but it looks like Verizon has purchased some company that they had sold off a part of their Fios stuff to. And the company, I don't know if the company got in dire straits or whatever, but they turned around and bought them back so that they could get their Fios infrastructure back in certain areas. I think that's what I remember coming across that a couple of a week or so ago. But I don't know.
What happened to Google Fiber?
I just want fiber, man. I got fiber. It just doesn't terminate into an ONT. I'm still trying to get them to.
Really?
You got fiber too.
I got an ONT.
Wait a minute. When
Two
did
months
you
ago.
They upgraded you?
I went in the office. I said, "This your TV service sucks. Shut it off. I don't need it. So internet only. And can we make it faster?" Through a conversation, a couple of phone calls, a few days, you're like, yep.
They put in an
tech
ad.
Showed up about a week ago.
They put in an ad tran.
No, not an ad. Sorry.
Because that's what they use.
I don't think it's an ad tran device.
Yeah, it's a little white ad tran device with one single fiber.
It's a little black box that's now inside and extended the fiber to inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to Ethernet, which goes to my firewall. There's no cable modem. And I've got.
Well, that is I think that is an ad trend. They started out using the small little black ones, and now they've upgraded to the white ones. And now I'm pissed because I'm the one
they
that
never told me it was available until I went in there and asked some questions.
That's the thing. Your area was built for RFOG. I know this because I built it.
Yeah.
This area is built for RFOG. I know this because I built it. And I have been pushing and pushing. We're talking about True Vista, by the way, and I don't give a shit because if they hear this or not, because I have been pushing and pushing right down the fucking road from me. They built all brand new fiber for fiber to the home. And I told my sales rep, which is a friend of mine, I said, I'm pissed because y'all built this fiber down here. We've had fiber here since 2008.
Talking about PK?
PK. Initials. No. No. This one's JC. But, and so I even sent them an email and said, this area, all you got to do is make changes in the head end and give us ONTs out here.
And just talked to customer service at the office when I went to shut off the TV.
Well, I'm going to explain to my sales contact that you've been upgraded to fiber to the home in an RFOG area for a few months now. And I want to know why I haven't been.
And also, when you told them, hey, it's fiber out here, didn't they go, oh, really?
Yeah. They didn't realize that this was RFOG already.
Yeah,
Vista
doesn't have all their shit together.
You ain't kidding.
No kidding. I mean, look at the telephone issues they had. And so they had an outage. I'm going to briefly discuss. I did throw it in here. So they had an outage for their telephone service that lasted almost 3 days. It affected one of my large clients where they could make outbound phone calls, but nobody could call in. Now, to be fair, this was not a True Vista specific issue. This had to do with the Zayo trunks that they're connected to. They don't have any redundancy. So if those trunks go down, their telephone service doesn't work.
That's 100%. That's not just like business lines.
That's 100%.
All customers.
Areas, all customers.
All True Vista customers.
100% of their voice service runs.
Yeah.
Out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I was told. And we had confirmation of that. I've had confirmation recently from two different sources that the question came up, why don't they have any redundancy?
So it's not important.
Until it is.
Oh, no, it's not important to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised. This is from the same people who can't seem to figure out how to get SIP to work over a new system.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. I did it in 2008.
It's revenue.
Yeah, see, that's
it. And if you provide redundant services, that takes away from the margin.
Well, yeah, but they need it. But it's still good customer service.
Who gives a shit about customer service?
It's
about money.
I mean,
it's a big company.
I know that, but if they're losing customers, they're not making revenue.
What choice do we have?
There's another.
Oh, we got choices. Trust me.
Mediacom?
Well, I'm talking about telephone service. I got choices when it comes to telephone service. Yeah. And yes, out here, I do have a choice of Mediacom if for this location, but other places,
I don't.
Clearwave in town.
I don't have that either.
Yeah, we don't have it out here either.
Yeah.
But so, you know, large company doesn't mean anything. Being profit driven doesn't mean anything because there's a very well known large company that builds a lot of data services and cloud services, that redundancy is required. You can't just launch a new service without having redundancy. Redundancy isn't free. It costs money.
Yeah, that, there's best practices, and then there's podunk little towns who don't get the best service.
But they could.
And don't know any better. And those cloud services, a lot of times they have to meet certain compliance levels.
They do redundant.
You know, there's no question to what they're going to have. There's no government requirement for redundancy and
for telephone service. There used to be.
Yeah, there used to be like requirements that you had to have telephone service available, had to be X9s reliable, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, or there could be some FTC regulations that could impose some fines for that sort of thing.
It really blew my mind, though. I mean, basically 3 days and just, no.
Wasn't 911 affected?
I can't remember if 911, well, it definitely would be affected for customers who were with TrueVista, I would think.
You pick up your phone, you effectively don't get dial tone that works.
But some government agencies, I think Tift County, I think the city of Tifton was probably affected.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Tift County was. But it was not a good time to be had by anybody there. And so I don't know what's going to come of that. But I have expressed my displeasure at the way TrueVista is doing things to my sales contact. And of course, he can't really do much, but other than pass my bitch and gripes along. And because I flat out told him, I said, look, you know, as being IT consultants, we recommend these services to our customers. And I said, if you want me to continue to recommend your service to my customers, then some things are going to have to change.
I don't recommend them.
You don't?
No, because I'm a Citricon partner.
Well, what about internet, though?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, see.
But not for phone. Who should I get a phone from? It's not going
to
be them.
Well, no. I mean, you've got a vested interest to do Citricon.
Yeah.
Now I have a vested interest to do Ciptrunk.
Yeah.
Because I'm a dealer for them.
Was that Ciptrunk.com?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
They were rock solid when I used them.
Yeah. So I don't know.
It's almost like operating SIP telephone services isn't difficult.
I know.
I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't. I mean, I'd have to look it up to do it again, but.
I meant like the places providing it to you guys. It's like they're doing it. They're doing it well. Why can't the local ISP do it?
Yeah. See that. And that's. So I've got another client that I'm trying to get flipped back over to TrueVista for internet. And I said, okay, I need SIP trunk service. They have no problem doing SIP trunk over their older Calix system, which is also uses a weird ONT, but they didn't have any problem with that. Well, this new GPON service that uses the Adtran ONTs, they can't figure out how to get SIP over it. And Tyler and I both are scratching our head going, SIP is agnostic.
It's IP based.
It's IP based.
Why does
care? What the hell? So I finally gave up. He was like, hey, can you handle the telephone stuff if we can make this deal? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it looks like I'm going to have to, but anyway, all right, we'll get off of that bitch train.
We tangented way off of cars and just into technology in general.
Well, I was going to move on anyway. I'm going to skip the one about Apple TV because I know you don't watch anything on Apple TV.
I don't watch TV.
Yeah, you don't watch TV much.
I didn't want to fork out the $4,000 plus for season tickets to Atlanta United again, so I paid the $69. A year to watch every game.
Oh, on Apple TV?
My own home, yeah.
And because
that's the only way to watch all games.
And which games are those?
Atlanta United's Major League Soccer.
Okay, that's what I thought it was soccer, yeah. That is a big thing that Apple TV, they paid so much money to actually get those soccer games.
Yeah.
Sports is a big deal, who knew?
Yeah, I know, right? I don't watch any sports. I don't give a shit about football, baseball, soccer.
I don't have to watch it live, but I will watch the replay.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, it was like, what was it, last year when Amazon bought the rights for Thursday Night Football for the next few years or something?
One of those. Yeah. It is a lot of money because I know that one of the satellite providers had it for a while, and boy, they couldn't get out the checkbook and write the check. So I think that was Amazon, yeah. Of course, they're the ones spending how many hundreds of millions of dollars for the Lord of the Rings series, which is now in the second season. It's not worth it. It's a beautiful show. Don't get me wrong. season one was good. Season two has been kind of a slog, but it's beautifully done. It's beautifully shot. Special effects are great, but the amount of money they've poured into that damn thing, no, they should not have done that.
I will say Apple's got some decent content.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of it.
I love Foundation for sci-fi.
Yeah, I'm
Foundation
waiting
was,
on that to continue.
Yeah, see, we need season three. Hopefully we're going to get that soon.
I like Sugar.
I haven't watched that. I love The Morning Show.
That didn't interest me enough to watch it.
Well, I'm a news junkie. So that's kind of the reason why. I'm a news media, you know, that's the reason why I have a media company.
Yeah,
so
I don't.
And if I wanted to watch The World End, I'd just open Twitter for 3 seconds.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So those poor cats.
I'm telling you, those cats. Let's see. OpenAI nears reasoning capable AI. They have defined 5 levels of artificial general intelligence, AGI, and believes it is nearing AI capable of human level reasoning. The levels include chatbots, which is a conversational language, 2, reasoners, which is human level problem solving, 3, agents, systems that can take actions, 4, innovators, AI that can aid in invention, and 5, organizations, AI that can do the work of an organization. Currently, OpenAI systems are at level 1, but are close to achieving level 2. The project Strawberry, formerly known as Q, aims to develop AI capable of human-like reasoning, planning, and deep research. Despite recent advances, achieving human reasoning remains a future goal. OpenAI's mission is to ensure AGI benefits all of humanity, but there's ongoing debate about whether large language models, also known as LLMs, will reach true AGI. Skeptics doubt LLMs can achieve human-level reasoning due to resource constraints, and OpenAI and other companies are heavily investing in AGI development, but precise definitions of AGI remain elusive. Now, I will say this. I got a question for you, I guess, because I think I know this one for Tyler. To what extent, because you mentioned it earlier, do you use ChatGPT?
I use it to search the web, honestly.
To search the web?
You use it like a search engine.
Yeah, I can have it write scripts because I don't want to go and search this or that. I can just tell it I want a script that
like coding scripts.
Does this, yeah.
Yeah.
Empty all data from Edge, clear all cookies, all browsing. Mm-hmm. And I want to do that as a scheduled task. And it spit out the script.
And it may or may not work.
I've not tested it yet because I'm not to that point in the project, but while I was waiting on something else, let me just see if that.
Yeah.
And that came from Copilot.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Copilot.
Just GPT just was asleep.
Right.
They're all LLMs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to ask about a topic, because I know that it can go and search through way more information in a few seconds than I can bother to read. I'll ask it statistics. Like how many. I got on a tear where I was watching Police Chase videos on YouTube, and I thought, this seems to happen a lot. And then these all seem to end pretty much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered how many high-speed police chases are there in the United States in a year? And I was very surprised. It was like 17,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
17,000.
Some states allow the posting of those videos more than others. They're pretty badass in Arkansas. just little things like that that are useful to me. Basically, it's a trivia show.
Yeah.
But Beth used it to just get her research started.
Mm-hmm.
She did not use it to produce the research, but
right.
just to get, because it can go and read journals and produce some data and go and find opinions that have been published. And I mean, it's useful for that. I'm not going to, you know, upload a picture of a wound and go, what do I do about this? I did ask it to, I took a picture of my room. I've just painted it and rearranged. I want a piece of art to cover the wall plates where the TV was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take those out.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked it to give me a piece of art that I could have printed and framed and put up there. It didn't do exactly what I wanted it to.
Shocker.
But it gave me a picture of the room.
Yeah.
Of a sample bedroom with a sample piece of art over the bed. And I was like, I just want the piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, nah, never mind. But it was pretty neat that I could do that. I can show you.
You can't show the listeners, though.
Yeah, you can't show
the listeners. I mean, if you wanted to see what I was talking about.
I primarily use it for summarizations. As I pointed out here, because I produce a newsletter called Tifton Talks Newsletter,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the stories that I get, of course, I always credit where I got the story from, yeah. with a link to the actual story. But to condense it into something that's digestible in the actual newsletter, I summarize it in ChatGPT.
Yeah, perfect.
And that's about the extent that sometimes I'll get it to rewrite. Like, I sent an email today, and I busted out what I wanted it to say. But then I was like, okay, let's see. Because I think I'm a pretty decent writer. But I was like, let me see what ChatGPT can do with this. So I copy and paste, and I said, please rewrite this. And it's, you know, it's like, certainly, you know. And it rewrote it, and it says, this sounds more professional. And I looked at it and went, you're not wrong. That does sound more professional. So I took that and edited it just a little bit, and that was the email that I sent. That's to the extent that I do it.
You know what else can do that? Grammarly.
Yeah.
They've added LLM capabilities to Grammarly. So you can just go, rephrase this more professionally. It sends it off to their cloud service, does its LLM yeah. number crunching, and sends it back.
You know, everything's got it in it now. I mean, even WordPress, if you pay for a subscription to Jetpack, which is a plugin for, you know, WordPress, it will literally come through and it's got a little AI thing on the side now. I think this has to be part of the Jetpack. I know it'll do image generation. AI image generation for you for your feature images and
that's
stuff.
Not controversial at all.
Yeah. But it'll literally, you can write stuff and then it'll, the little button will pop up over here, basically like AI assistant, try it, you know, and it'll try to rewrite the thing for you. So I don't know. I guess the biggest question I have is, do you think we will ever achieve AGI?
No.
With our current level of technology, no. Our computers are not powerful enough.
Okay. I don't think so
no
either.
No matter how powerful a computer is, it can't smell.
Well,
you could build an olfactory sensor for it.
Do it. You'd be a billionaire.
I said you as in general, and like
then,
humanity.
And then tie that into all the other senses that we have. We have ideas because we feel things. We have problems that computers can't detect.
Mm.
And that's where invention comes from. It's where innovation lives, is in those minute human level problems. And computers don't have the five senses.
So you don't think that we could ever get to a point that is depicted in a lot of sci-fi series and movies and what have you? I mean, Data on Star Trek, for example, you come up with something like a positronic brain. I mean, he literally, I mean, for all practical purposes, he is human. He has, even they added the emotion chip later on, and he can actually experience emotion. He can see, he can touch, you know, he can feel, he can taste.
He can smell, too.
He can smell.
In the respect of, you know, it's like, what is the chemical composition of the air around us? And he could tell you.
So, but you're saying that if we could build...
But can he form an opinion based on that? Does he like it or not like it?
Yeah.
Well, that's, what does he think about cilantro?
Well, that's the thing about like.
I swear, the world is divided on whether cilantro is good.
I hate cilantro.
Or it tastes like soap.
That's a genetic thing. So, like that's a human genetic thing. Some people have a gene that makes it taste like soap.
So, are we gonna how do we divide those?
You don't. They're all human. Just
they're just gonna have to be Cylons.
But the thing with like Data is, he didn't really form his own personal opinions about things very much because it didn't. Matter whether he liked something or didn't like it. It did not affect his function.
Did he invent things?
I don't remember.
I don't remember. Well, he did try to create a new him.
Yeah, he tried to create offspring. Yeah. He's created holodeck programs.
Yeah.
He does stuff. He can create things if it's required of him. His personal opinions and stuff didn't really come out too much until the emotion chip, where it made him have an opinion on things.
Yeah, okay, better example, or slightly different. The doctor from Voyager.
He had the EMH.
Yeah, I don't think he has the ability to smell. And
he's a hologram.
Because he's a hologram. But his programming actually evolved to the point that he was basically considered, he's a sentient being that's only can walk around with that hollow emitter.
From the 29th century.
Yeah, or be in an environment that has hollow emitters. But his consciousness actually exists in the computer itself.
It's basically an execution thread.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about 24, 25th century type stuff. I get that, but...
Also fantasy.
Fantasy, that's yeah. True, that's true. I mean, I don't think that we're going to get to the point where you see in like horror films where Skynet becomes self-aware and... Because that's literally an AGI. It can make decisions based on its own thought processes, its own opinions, data that it pulls in and says, okay, humans need to be wiped off the face of the freaking planet.
It doesn't just decide that. It's been given the task to make things better. And
true.
Then it looks at everything and goes, well, humans are the problem.
Yeah, which is not wrong.
That's right. The thing. Because...
And so, but that's how it makes its determination. Went through what's wrong and what caused all this and
humans.
You fuck.
That's because it was not given the biases that humans have, and so to us we're like, well, what's wrong? Make things better. It's implicitly make things better for us. You give an unfeeling, uncaring machine that isn't human a task to make things better, we're just a data point.
Yeah.
So
everything's a data point.
Logically, it could turn quote unquote turn on humans because if you give it such a vague task, well, you didn't constrain it well enough.
You didn't say, well, what is better?
It's like even in one back to the Star Trek comparison, there was an episode of, I believe, TNG where Geordi asks the computer to create an adversary that can defeat Data.
Yeah, he screwed up.
It was too vague. And so the computer made a hollow program that could defeat Data by giving it access to the rest of the starship.
Yeah, it was a Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, he made it Moriarty.
Thing. Yeah, and yeah, because it was so predictable. Yeah, that was always a good episode. But yeah,
and so that's the thing with all of these. You give a computer, whether it can understand natural language or not, you give it a command and a task with effectively no limits, and it will come up with rather inventive ways of accomplishing those.
But that's not AGI. Necessarily.
Depends on your definition of AGI.
I know, that's where we get into the weeds on that, because the thing I think that even if it gets to the point where it seems eerily similar to human thought, human emotion, and all of that, it's always going to lack the one thing that we have that we like to call humanity.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know.
What, you think about how penicillin was discovered.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
A computer wouldn't have forgotten to leave the trays out.
Yeah, that's true.
Without a mechanical failure.
Yeah. So
well,
so actually, so for it to be true AGI, it's got to be able to make mistakes.
Well, that's actually true.
And learn from those.
Because.
Yeah.
And suffer. And walk outside in the rain.
Because something.
And have that human experience in order to help us as humans.
Well, there's something that you
so
can.
No.
You can see and even.
Unless it's a Cylon.
There's something you can see even in machine learning, just basic machine learning. Machine learning differs from writing an algorithm, because you write an algorithm, it'll do the exact same thing every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Machine learning algorithms can have feedback from their output to modify themselves.
Right.
And so they will make mistakes. They will learn from it.
But
and
will they feel bad?
No.
They're too simple to...
Will they suffer?
They're too simple to elicit feelings onto them.
That's how some things are invented. That's how some decisions are made.
Well, yeah.
It will never be uncomfortable. And so, no, it's not going to
human consciousness
mimic us.
Human consciousness is so unimaginably complex
that
our current level of computational power doesn't come anywhere close to being able to mimic it. What we're doing right now is mimicking our senses. ChatGPT, it kind of sounds like and talks like a human. That's basically a mouth with no brain.
Yeah.
It can sound human, but isn't human. Think of a parrot.
Sorry, I was about to make another political, but so I'll refrain.
But consider parrots. They can be taught to speak.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're saying.
True.
ChatGPT is the same way. It doesn't really understand what it's outputting. It's outputting sentence-like structures based on a set of inputs and some other parameters it's received. It doesn't know anything about what it's talking about.
Do you have ChatGPT on your phone?
Yeah. This is it.
And once you get the iPhone...
Do you talk to it?
No.
Once you get the iPhone 16 Pro, it has ChatGPT built right in.
Nice.
It's part of Apple Intelligence. They even showed it. They had it ask it something about a photograph, and yeah. It was like, oh, here's some stuff, and it said, from ChatGPT.
It's like, okay. Thanks. I'm curious. Hang on. Hey, will you ever achieve AGI? How smart are you? Okay. I don't have goals or aspirations, so I won't achieve anything in a personal sense, including AGI. Then it specifies artificial general intelligence. However, it's possible that future advancements in AI could result in AGI, an AI system capable of understanding, learning, and performing any intellectual task that a human can. Whether that happens and when is still uncertain and a subject of ongoing research. As for my intelligence, I am highly specialized. I excel at tasks that involve language understanding, generating human-like text, providing information, and problem-solving within defined parameters. But I don't have general understanding or self-awareness. I don't possess creativity, emotional intelligence, or reasoning skills in the same way a human does, nor can I truly understand, in quotes, concepts like a person can. My, quote, intelligence is based on patterns in data and information, not innate awareness.
Wow, it just roasted itself.
It did. I love it.
I mean, I will say no. Nope. I'll stick with no.
You'll stick with no.
It won't. Not in my lifetime, and that's really all that matters to me.
So what's the picture that nobody else can see?
This is a picture of, no, I didn't know if I was being able to bring it up. This is the picture that I sent and said, I would like a piece of art to go above the headboard.
I would like a simple, elegant piece to hang over the headboard covering those wall plates. Yeah.
And it sent me a whole scene. So that's what it sent.
I mean, that's pretty. That's nice.
It works. Same general colors.
That's not your room.
No, it's not my room. But it said, and maybe if you buy this furniture and put this nice deck and raise your walls another 4 feet.
Remodel your house.
Remodel the room, yes.
So that's the image I said.
I see the inspiration.
Yeah. But
I just wanted something that I could just directly go to my print guy and say, hey, print this on canvas.
It did. It gave you that image. Have them print that. A picture of an AI bedroom.
Of the bedroom that I don't have?
Yes.
To put over the bed. That's it. I like
that
it.
That probably wouldn't be a terrible idea.
It's a representation of what this could be. That's what this...
I'll bring a photo of what I create for that space.
There you go.
But back on the topic of AI and really reaching their OpenAI's level 2, it says... Let me back up. On the thing about will we achieve AGI ever? I think it depends entirely on what computing platform we build it on. Because as we're advancing our technology, we're reaching the ends of silicon.
Yeah.
We can only pack transistors into each other, like next to each other, so well. Transistors are also quite limiting. They're either on or off. Humans and other biological creatures don't operate in on and off. We don't operate in fixed patterns of little switches.
So do we need living computers?
We're going to get to the point of living computers to a point.
Yeah.
Where we're already doing that. We have, we're doing like biomimetic kind of things where very basic biological structures can be controlled with electrical signals. That research is being done into that right now. And so logically, if you extend that further, you could end up with a form of analog computing, whether that's electrical analog or if it's biological analog computing, where you basically have like a PCI card that has, like Voyager had, the bio gel packs.
You
could have something like that on like a PCI card. You put that into a server and it does the reasoning and stuff in some grown way.
Yeah.
Those would have the capability of having the neural density required to do these unusual non-black or white queries and problem solving.
Would that be better than quantum computing?
Probably.
I think you would have to operate at the quantum level using organic.
Well,
so material. Organic quantum computers.
The question arises.
Might as well.
But the question arises there. Are we quantum computers?
We don't know.
Because that's something we're always trying to achieve, human level intelligence, human level capabilities. Well, if we can do this biologically, why can't we replicate this? Why do we need something? Why do we need to like start breaking physics down to some quantum level to pull this off when we're doing this in a conventional manner.
Yeah.
In ways that don't even need an electrical supply.
Hey, data's positronic brain. Except it wasn't organic, but...
No, but positrons were some level of quantum stuff, so...
Yeah.
Could quantum computers do some of this? I suppose so. But quantum computers really aren't economical right now.
Mm. Organic computers. Now you're making me think of Daleks from Doctor Who.
Well, would we be too far off of that?
Mm, no.
So I do think that we could. I think we're capable of doing it. Just you're not going to see it on silicon.
I don't think we're capable of doing it. I think we're capable of starting it and training it and letting it evolve on its own. That's the only way that can happen.
Well, consider most AIs like
but we can't write that software. It's going to have to write itself.
Well, think about it. We're not writing these LLMs. We're not writing machine learning. We write the structures and it trains. It trains.
Yeah.
So that's true.
We aren't writing.
We kind of steer it when it goes awry, and then, yeah. So that's how it's going to happen.
We're already doing that, and that's how biological evolution works anyway. Like, mm-hmm. cells as they grow and divide.
Yeah, that's how it can happen any other way.
So that's what I was getting at. We'll do that.
Yeah.
We're not going to sit there and program these little enzymes to do stuff. I mean, we could. We do that now. That's pretty cool. But you can't program an enzyme to answer a legal question.
No, that's what you need Legal Eagle for.
Exactly. But the reason...
I will say I have... already done this twice.
You've done what?
I've created organic sentient computers.
I was waiting for someone to go there.
I've done it three times.
And they all have their damnedest opinions.
Yeah, yeah they do.
But the level two reasoners, it says human level problem solving. I take a bit of an issue for that because what is human level problem solving? If you look at humanity in recent time, they've really been putting that bar on the ground. I know people who... And you know them. We've all seen them. A pop-up shows up on their computer, and their entire day has gone off the rails. They don't know to click OK, close program, restart it.
Yeah.
That's human-level problem solving on both of our parts. Human-level problem solving is a person not understanding what to do there, mm-hmm. but human-level problem solving is also us going, you click OK, restart the computer.
Yeah.
They're both human-level problem solving. Also, a toddler figuring out to group blocks by color or shape. That's human level problem solving.
Don't stick the fork in the electrical outlet.
Yeah. Or children stacking their toys up to climb over a gate that they otherwise can't reach.
Yeah.
That's human level problem solving. So just saying human level problem solving is too vague. It could be anything from you built a robot that can figure out how to climb a gate by stacking up stuff around it to inventing some new battery technology. That's also human level problem solving. These are completely different.
What I'm hearing is that we'll probably wind up like Dune. And in the universe of Dune, they abolished artificial intelligence, I think, due to some war. And the only things that are computerized is they have humans that are called Mentats, human computers. That can literally do calculations as fast as our modern day computers can now.
Impressive.
Yeah. But that when you're just, I'm like, yep, organic human compute. Yeah. Mentats. Yep. Dune.
Yeah. I feel like what we're going to, if we really do start having AI technologies that can start showing actual problem solving capabilities,
mm-hmm.
which I know ChatGPT earlier said it can solve problems. It really can't. it's terrible.
Like tic-tac-toe.
It's terrible at math. They can't do math. ChatGPT actually cannot do math. Language models cannot do computation.
Okay.
Their only reason you can give it some math and it can solve it is because it's seen it before. But it doesn't actually, and you can fool it. You can say 1 + 1 = 3, and it may argue with you, and you can convince it that 1 + 1 = 3, and then ask it, hey, what is 1 + 1? And it will still give you 2.
We have just discovered that Tyler is actually ChatGPT.
I am far better, excuse you.
Okay. All right, so
I'm sure we could beat AI to death for another 3 hours.
Well, I think what Ben is saying, not in our lifetime, basically,
which is all that matters to me.
Yeah,
when I'm dead, you guys can have it.
Well, I theoretically would have a longer lifetime than either of you.
I was going to say, you guys, I'm older than you. I'll be dead first.
Well, same.
In theory,
if you're dead, I'm dead to you.
Wow, yeah. I just felt that. I'm about to have an existential crisis now.
Well, if he's dead...
Don't get me started.
If he's dead, then he's dead to you.
I've been doing this for 2 years.
Did you see the Chase Bank glitch?
I saw videos on Twitter of people but making the attempt, and I never really found out what it was until I read your synopsis.
Yeah.
And that led me to believe everything I saw on Twitter. I was like, yep, that sounds like something stupid people would.
So basically what we have is it's a recent incident involving a supposed glitch at Chase Bank ATMs that led people to believe that they could withdraw large sums of money by depositing fake checks. This trend, dubbed an infinite money hack, saw users flaunt their gains on social media. However, experts quickly clarified that this was classic check fraud, which can result in severe penalties, including hefty fines and imprisonment. Chase Bank swiftly addressed the issue, reversing the fraudulent transactions and leaving many participants with massive negative balances. As videos of people celebrating their ill-gotten gains emerged, so did updates showing their shock at the consequences, with some accounts being overdrawn by tens of thousands of dollars. Financial educators and social media users warned of the serious legal repercussions, mocking those who fell for the scheme. The maximum punishment for such fraud can include fines up to $1 million and 30 years in prison. So basically, they wrote checks, fake checks, and then they deposited them through an ATM. And because of the way the system did it, from what I understand, it automatically made a portion of the check available in your checking account, which I thought was so weird. I never knew that this was something that any of these ATM depositing situations would actually do. So, and I don't know if it was like 50% or 25%. I can't remember what the article said, but let's just say, for, you know, safety, you know, you write a $10,000 check and it made available like $4,000 immediately that you could withdraw. Except these people were writing massively larger checks. You know, there was one I saw where they were talking about how they were crying because now their checking account was negative $35,000. And they've already spent the money.
I think I've seen one that was like minus $90,000 or something.
Yeah. And they're like, Their lives are basically destroyed because they can't come up with that kind of money.
They believed something they saw on Twitter
and immediately went out and tried
and
it.
Dropped it.
Yeah. The videos of some of these that I saw where the dudes were just running around, you know, holding just gobs of cash and just throwing it in the air like, hey, you know.
Some of those were staged, by the way.
Well, I know. That one seemed like it was staged to me.
It was. There's a freeze frame where the money says motion picture money.
Okay. All right, well, I'll concede that, because I thought that was the dumbest thing. You just found a loophole. You got this cash, and you're going to throw it around?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Well, because flaunting your money, it's like, I have so much money, I don't care if I lose a few hundred here and there. You know, that mindset is what they were appearing to be like. It was overdone on purpose, but apparently the viewers on TikTok were completely unaware.
All of a sudden, we have a whole lot more adults in the world.
Does being in debt make you an adult?
That lesson will.
And it may make you more of an adult once you get in prison. I don't understand this at all. How human beings, I mean, I constantly wake up every day and see something on the internet that I slap my forehead and I'm like, I don't get it. How can anybody, are people really this stupid?
Yes.
They legitimately, I mean, we joked about the fact that there are people out there that think that just because they have checks in the checkbook, I mean, honestly, who uses checks anymore? But I don't write them. I receive them.
I write them to the county when I pay my car tag.
Oh, I do it all online. Oh. I'll pay the convenience fee just so I don't have to write a check.
I pay one whole dollar of convenience
fee. Yeah, it's a buck. I mean, come on.
I won't pay the mail fee. I'll drive it over there because I'm already in town.
Yeah, but if you do it online, you just pay a buck.
Well, it's actually,
I don't get to see pretty people.
No, it's actually $2 if you pay it online. You still have to pay the mail fee.
All right, let's argue about that.
Okay, whatever. But the point is, where was I going? I don't know. You sidetracked me.
Checkbooks.
Checkbooks. Yeah, so there are people, probably still to this day, but I do remember this growing up, and I've heard that well, I've got money as long as I got checks in the checkbook, right?
Yeah, it's been a funny joke.
It's been a funny joke. But apparently there are people that legitimately believe this, you know, because they legitimately believe that they can deposit a $75,000 check.
That they wrote to themselves.
That they wrote to themselves.
They might have stolen a checkbook.
I don't know.
Pretty much every checking account from every bank, you can request a checkbook. They'll mail you one.
Yeah. I mean, I have mine made through Walmart.
Yeah, you can do that too. I got mine through my bank. 2016 when I made the account, and I've used two checks. One was voided just to prove that I have an account.
I don't even think I write a single check during the year anymore because I do everything online even the water bill, I pay directly out of my checking account, but I still do it online. I just don't like checks. I like receiving checks, but I even give my clients, even for large invoices, you know, FreshBooks supports ACH payments.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, it costs me 1%. Oh, okay. So what? If it's an $1,800 invoice, I'll take the 1% hit if they'll go ahead and pay it right then. It still takes longer than the credit card does to clear mm-hmm. through Stripe, but it's in process, you know? You know, I have a client right now that I had to reach out to today and say, hey, you know, I want to make sure this didn't fall through the cracks. And he's saying, oh, you know, we had some personnel changes, stuff like that. And he's like, do you want me to mail it or you want to come get it? Well, I don't want to go get it. So I was like, you can mail it, or those links I sent you, you can actually pay just straight out of your bank account, and it's secure and easy. We'll see if he does it. But
yeah, about money and stuff, about the time delay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing with when it comes to checks and other related things like that, is there's a time delay from the time you spend it to the time that you actually have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
That part seems to confound a lot of younger people because they didn't grow up with checks and checkbooks and stuff. Like, I grew up around, you know, mom writing checks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for groceries with a check.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with an understanding of how a check worked. It's basically an IOU. I promise I'll keep this amount of money in my account until you go to the bank and deposit this check.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understood that. Well, like, I know some people personally who, for the life of them, cannot grasp the concept that even with a debit card's basically a virtual check,
mm-hmm.
that when you put a debit card into a gas pump or pay something, that not all merchants do an instant transaction. Some of them is still, to this day, waits till the end of the day to clear all transactions.
Yeah.
And they've gotten themselves into trouble multiple times because they'll look in their bank and go, I have $100. They'll spend $50 on gas. Forget that they spend money on gas, I guess. And then, like, the next day, they'll look in their account and go, oh, I have $100. And then they'll go spend 75 of it. Well, for those of you who can do basic math, 75 plus 50 is more than 100. And then a few days later, they'll look in their account and they'll be like minus $25 and be like, where on earth did this, someone stealing my money? No, you are.
Yeah, you're stealing your money.
And they're like, somebody at the gas station stealing my money and stuff. And I've explained at least two or three times to this one particular person. No.
Mm-hmm.
Certain gas pumps, when you put your card in it, it'll do an authorization.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually settle the balance out until end of day. And especially if it's on the weekend, it may not settle out till Monday.
I can say that's one thing. You know, the Amoco station that's over off of Jordan and 319?
New?
Yeah, built it about 2 years ago.
Okay.
All right. So it's an Amoco station.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I stop off and get gas there now because a lot of times, I mean, that's the direction we go to pick groceries up on Friday. And sometimes I just go over there because Enmark over here on 82 started, the NFC started refusing to work with my phone because I use my phone because I put everything on my Apple credit card. So I go over there. And one thing I noticed, other than the fact that my phone works, is as soon as it does the authorization, I get the notification there's a dollar authorization on my credit card immediately. As soon as I am done pumping the gas, within 15 seconds, another notification pops up on my phone and shows me the total, like if it's $25 or $28, immediately has hit my credit card. And that $1 authorization's already gone just that fast.
Modern infrastructure, wow.
Yeah, I know. So, whereas down here at Jen Earl's, I quit going down there and getting gas years ago because our credit card machines half the time didn't work in the damn gas pump. So,
well, don't head up a bit north towards the Ashburn area. Apparently, there's some really just rural gas stations that take a couple of days to actually do something with your money.
They'll batch out every day.
Yeah, they still do that, which says to me that system's probably still running off of like a DOS machine or something.
Or just heavy on cash. Like, we only did two transactions.
And it probably still is using dial-up.
Like,
probably on a copper line that if it rains, it may have to try again the next day.
Yep. Have you, I know Tyler hasn't done this. Have you ever bounced a check?
Once.
Yeah.
By mistake.
Mine was to
Target, of all places.
Mine, and it's so embarrassing. Now, this happened to us early in our marriage, me and Lee. And this was back whenever Food Line in Fitzgerald was still there. And that's where we got our groceries, was Food Line. And somehow or another, one of us, I manage all the money now. No slight against my wife. It's just, I'm anal retentive when it comes to money.
It has to be one person's job.
Yeah.
And you also run a business now that has heavy influence on their finances.
Well, that's true too.
So.
But we accidentally bounced one at Food Line. And God, man, going, and the fees, they charged you, let's see, I think Food Line charged a fee of like $25 or $35, then the bank charged a fee. So it's like, wait a minute. For this one bounce check that maybe it only bounced because it was $2 over what I had available in the checking account, now just cost me roughly $50,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the things that the Biden administration has been working on as far as capping what banks can charge and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, one time in my life, we bounced one. And you walk in there and when you have to go pick the check up, it's so embarrassing because it's like you're being judged. And it's like, I didn't mean to do this. You know, I'm not a deadbeat. I wasn't trying to play the system or mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to get ahead, you know, play the game back then.
Racing your check.
Racing the check and the deposit and all this other kind of stuff. We weren't doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, one time.
Yeah, the closest I've come was I attempted a Cash App transaction without enough money in my checking account because I forgot to transfer the money into that account first.
But it told you no.
It declined immediately because you had your debit card to Cash App.
Yeah.
And so it does an authorization for the amount and went,
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest I've ever come.
I wonder if that's probably the reason why you can't do credit cards, or at least you used to couldn't.
You can do credit cards through Cash App, but certain cards you can't.
Yeah.
Like my credit cards, it won't accept.
Mm.
But if you do them that way, they charge hellacious fees.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's almost like going and getting cash off of a credit card. It's usually like 30% or some nonsense. Yeah. It's crazy.
My credit cards, the cash advanced is the same as the APR.
Yeah.
Plus like $5. It's I would not want to do that. But that's also like the whole bouncing a check thing. That was one of the major features touted of the checking account that I got back in 2016 was you could turn on overdraft protection.
Mm-hmm.
It's all overdraft protection is whenever once you set it up, you basically say, here's my checking account.
Mm-hmm.
If it attempts to be overdrawn, transfer money from this other account.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't spot you. It will just transfer automatically to an automatic transfer.
Yeah.
So that would mean that if you go to you write somebody a check, you're $2 short. And then when they go to deposit the check, it hits the bank systems. The bank system goes, you're $2 short, transfers $2 out of your savings or whatever into the check. So it clears, saving you $70 of fees.
Yeah. Except now you've got services like Chime. Is it Chime?
Chime's one of them.
Yeah. Where they claim that they have overdraft protection where you can up to $200 can write a check over or do a money transfer over and they will cover it.
Basically a loan.
Yeah. Now I have to wonder, I've never looked into it, but I have What's to wonder if it's they charge you any kind of percentage on that. Like,
why would they not?
I mean, it would make sense, yeah. Right? And it's probably high.
I got to give credit to Ally. I used to bank with Ally. And, you know, when I was working in Atlanta, we had a house in Adel and I had an apartment in Atlanta and I didn't make that much money.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, pretty slim a lot of times. And I had a couple of overdrafts. I had no bounced checks because write me a check.
Mm-hmm.
But the overdraft fee, $9.
That's
it.
That's not bad.
I mean, that was fair.
Yeah.
Ally also has historically had some of the highest savings APRs.
Yeah.
They usually beat out Capital One.
They're high.
Even when the federal rate was really low. And so like getting 1% on your savings was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Ally would almost always have a quarter of a percent higher than everyone else.
Yeah. Ally has no brick and mortar facility.
Capital One barely does.
Yeah, but they have some.
They have their cafes in some places where you can't actually do any banking. Also, the thing about the Chime, overdraft protection. It's called Spot.
Yeah.
Basically what it does is if you overdraft your account or overdraw your account, SpotMe will cover you up to the whatever the SpotMe limit is for your specific account because you have to apply to it. They can decline you.
So it's a credit application.
But what they do is they will put your account into the negative. So the next direct deposit will work to fill the hole back up.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it does not mention any kind of fees or percentages.
It's a tiny shot.
As an aside, not that anybody asked, but the Apple Savings right now is 4.4% APY.
Nice.
Apple Savings?
I use my Apple card for everything.
Right.
You know, you and I have talked about this. Well, I have their Apple Savings account. And so all the percentages that I get on purchases, mm-hmm. I automatically have going over into my Apple Savings account. And the lights just flickered, so maybe we can get to the end of this.
I didn't know they had. I don't think I've read anything about that. I've got my Apple Cash.
Yeah,
that I can use to buy things.
When they introduced it about 2 years ago, I signed up for it, and so that's.
So it's a bank account.
It's a savings account that's only in this in the wallet.
Oh
well, money's not real, you know that.
But then you but you can transfer.
But is it treated like does it have an account number?
No. It's only you can transfer money into it from different sources. But, and then you can transfer money out of it. Like whichever phone I decide to buy, I have started where I don't do the whole contract with cell phone companies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy the phone outright. And part of the reason for that is because we use Visible, which is the best, cheapest damn cell phone company you can get.
Not the cheapest, but it is for our area.
For our area, it's
one of the best.
It's $25 a month flat.
For unlimited. As long as you don't want 5G ultra wideband, which is so plentiful around here, as you know.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it makes sense to do that because if I want to get a phone on my Apple credit card where I can pay for it monthly mm-hmm. with no interest, I have to tie it to one of the major carriers. Because when you go to buy, this is a change they made last year. You go to buy the phone through the Apple website
mm-hmm.
and you say, I want to do no interest for 24 months on my Apple credit card. It'll say, which carrier? Visible's not on there, even though it's owned by Verizon.
That confused the shit out of me this time. I bought mine, and I just did the thing with Verizon. I order from Verizon, I'll just make the payments.
Yeah.
The company pays for that.
Mm-hmm.
The company bought my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got Beth's phone, I put it on my Apple card. I had to pick. I was like, sure. But, and it got Verizon so confused. My number was on her phone, and my phone didn't work, and
oh boy,
we had to go to the
Verizon store.
And have them just work it all out.
Yeah, I moved my phone, my wife's phone, Oriana's phone over to Visible. He moved his over to Visible.
I think I moved mine. I think mine was one of the first as a pilot.
I did mine first.
I said one of the first.
Yeah, you did yours, and then I did the rest because the one we were all concerned about was your mom's.
As usual.
We cannot screw hers up, you know. Devin, my oldest son, he's the only one left on Verizon.
Which means he's paying way more than he needs to for that phone service.
I can tell you what he's paying. We pay 25 per.
Well, you pay 25.
You upgraded, didn't you?
I pay 35 because I got a deal for.
That's right.
I actually don't know how long the deal lasts.
Yeah. He's still paying about 80.
For one line.
For one line. Yeah.
Which is absurd.
Yeah. And Visible runs on Verizon network because it's owned by Verizon. Mm-hmm.
It used to just run on their towers, but now it's the same APN.
Yeah.
It's probably what I'm paying.
What, 80?
I pay about $250 for.
Yeah. I dropped us down from paying a total of $400, which Devin was covering part of that, with all our phones on Verizon, down to $25. He pays his at $35. I pay Lee's at 25 and Oriana's at 25.
So you pay $75.
I pay $75. So I went from whatever Devin was covering. I was still coming out of pocket about $300 a month for cell phones. And now it's 75.
And we get unlimited everything still. Like the experience is virtually the same.
Yeah, it's the same. So,
because Verizon's pretty much the only tower that reaches out here. So.
Yeah. And the only thing you have to contend with is they don't do family plans for every phone. You have to have an account. That means you have to have an email address.
Separate account.
Separate
payments.
Yes.
Separate account, separate email address. They don't accept aliases, which is a damn shame.
Yeah, I literally had to go create.
No, it's an alias.
They don't accept the plus in a email address.
Yeah, I had to create funky email addresses at Gmail, like a name and plus the telephone number. So it, you know, so, but hey, to save that amount of money, I don't care. I'll put it on my own mail server if I have to. All right. Last story. This one, I think we can all laugh at. After seeing Wi-Fi network name Stinky, Navy found hidden Starlink dish on U.S. war machine. So in early 2023, crew members of the USS Manchester secretly installed a Starlink satellite dish on the ship to bypass restricted internet access. They named the Wi-Fi network. This is a little misleading. They didn't name it Stinky.
I'm not convinced about that.
Which drew attention and led to an investigation. Command Senior Chief Grizel Marrero, orchestrated the installation, which involved bolting the Starlink terminal to the ship's deck and extending its coverage with additional equipment. Despite efforts to disguise the setup and falsify usage reports, the unauthorized Starlink was discovered by a civilian worker with the Naval Information Warfare Center, which my understanding is, in other reports, they were literally there to install a Starlink on the ship.
A specific one.
It's
like Starshield or whatever it's called.
Right, when they discovered the other one. The Navy conducted a full investigation, resulting in administrative punishments for those involved, including Marrero, who was relieved of her position, pled guilty during a court-martial. And then it says the incident highlights the risk and consequences of bypassing security protocols for internet access. The reason why I say they didn't set it to Stinky is Elon Musk actually said on Twitter at some point that the SSID, the network name, was either going to be Starlink or it was going to be Stinky in an effort to get people to change it.
He specifically said in June of 2022, we're changing Starlink's default Wi-Fi name to Stinky. I'm pretty sure that's unique. This will encourage people to change it. If you can't smell your Wi-Fi, how do you know it's real?
With him, you never know if he was bullshitting or not.
He doesn't bullshit like that.
But yeah.
He bought Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he tried to back out, but...
Well, he said it,
mm-hmm.
Then they made him do it.
Yeah, he had to eat his words. But the thing was like, yeah, it said a reader claims that then the SSID is actually Stinky, but the actual Starlink fact page says it's Starlink. So who's right?
I'm not sure, because they eventually changed the network name to mimic a printer.
Which was still kind of stupid because no such printers existed on the boat.
Yeah.
Ship.
On the ship.
Yeah. Sorry, it's hard to offend the boat people.
And at some point, whenever they pulled into port, they literally went and bought
extenders
and some cabling and stuff so that they could cover the ship better.
Because Starlink on one, because the Starlink, I believe, was nearer one side of the ship.
Yeah.
Ships are very oblong. So it didn't quite reach all the way to the other end of the ship. So they bought Wi-Fi extenders because that's a good idea.
How they thought that they were ever going to get away with this.
I would have never tried it.
See, here's one thing that they did.
Knowing what I know now. Now, when I was in the military, I wouldn't have known any better.
See, here's something that I don't understand. They got a Starlink. They installed it on the ship. Why didn't they turn off SSID broadcasting?
Exactly.
You're breaking the rules on a government ship.
Is that possible with Starlink?
I would think so. I mean, I've never known of any Wi-Fi that I can't disable the broadcasting on.
Well, this is also Elon's. So.
I mean, that's a possibility.
But I never did look on mine.
Yeah, if you can do it, then that would be the thing that you'd want to do. Basically make it a hidden network.
Yeah.
There is. As of February 2024, you can disable the SSID broadcasting.
Not long.
Okay, well, this happened in 2023.
So they, at that point in time, you couldn't do it.
Could not.
Without just disabling the Wi-Fi on it entirely and putting your own router.
Which, I mean, they could have done, but...
Yeah, I mean, if they're running the freaking Best Buy to buy extenders, they could just buy an access point.
Put in some Ubiquities, man. Then you got to have a controller.
You don't have to. You can set them up ad hoc. Or not ad hoc. That's actually a Wi-Fi thing. You can set them up independent.
No, you can't.
Yeah, you can.
No, you can't. You have to put them on the phone. You cannot set Ubiquiti access points up unless you control them.
Gotta have.
No,
you can take the controller down.
You can take it without
change anything.
You can do it without a controller, guys. Mm-hmm. You install the app.
All right.
Connect to the Wi-Fi.
Well, create a YouTube video, and then we'll know how.
No, that's what I'm saying. The app. You have to have the app on a phone.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's not binding it to the app. The app is just used to configure it.
No, it does bind
my
it.
App talks to the controller.
No. I've done this many times.
No, I'm saying, here's my experience.
Let's argue about this.
No. At a client that I just recently upgraded their Wi-Fi stuff, I initially set the access point up on the app. Okay? Then I changed phones. When I got there to work on it, the app discovered the AP, but it would not let me make any changes to the access point. So I looked it up. I'm like, how did I lose control of this? And I discovered that if you set it up on a phone, on one phone, and then you change to another phone and your apps come over, the credentialing or whatever that connects the app to the access point is broken. You have to do some kind of like export stage.
So my question is, when did they change it? Because I've set up access points using the Unify app. You connect to the Wi-Fi that's being broadcast by the Unify by default. You connect to it. You open the app, say, add a device. You don't log into an account because I don't have a Unify account. Click add a device. It scans your network. You tap on one. You can change the login password or you just use the one default on the back. Set up the Wi-Fi, set your power settings, whatever, disconnect. And I've done this across two different phones.
Well, I can tell you that this year it did not work.
For you.
Right.
Second question. In the Unify app, do you log into a Unify account?
Of course.
Maybe that auto-associates shit then.
Because my app also connects to all my controllers that I have. So if I'm out and about and I need to look at somebody's Wi-Fi, I can pull up the app and it connects to their various controllers, because I run the controllers either software or I have a cloud key. I have a cloud key at one client and, I have a V1 at one client and a V2 at another. So it'll connect to all of that. This particular client, I was not running a controller at the time. So when I initially set their access point up 2 years ago, I did it on my phone about 2 years ago because it was when I still had my iPhone SE. And I did not realize that whenever I went back up there to try to do something with it, that I could not control the damn thing. And so whenever I looked it up, that's what I discovered. It was like if you've changed phones and you were not using a controller, it flat out told me you're going to have to reset the access point and reassociate it with the app on your current phone. And I went, hell no, I'm putting in a controller.
Well, if you don't know the login credentials, then that is true. Because we had one at my previous job where we had configured it and completely forgot what we fat fingered the password as. Mm-hmm. So we just had to factory reset it. But we had configured that AP as standalone before. And when we connected to it, it said, what's the login credentials? And we went,
Yeah, see, I think that's what screwed me is because when I brought my app up on the other phone, of course, I was logged into my Unify account. So it added it to that app under my Unify account. However, it would not take the username and password for my Unify account to get into that access point on this phone. And those were the only credentials that were ever set because I never set a username and password on that particular access point when I installed it. I just brought it up and configured it in the app.
Did you try UBNT, UBNT?
Yeah. Oh, trust me, dude. I tried everything. And that's when I said, well, I'm going to have to come up here. They've got a Windows 20, is it 2012 or 2016? I can't remember. Anyway, it's a Windows server. So I just enabled Hyper-V and installed the controller on it. And then,
which I can confirm, you can still do exactly as I was saying. There's a help document on Unify that talks about setting up standalone access points without Unify. It says there are limitations. Each AP must be independently configured. Quick roaming doesn't work. This AP management is limited to the Unify mobile app. Web is not supported, using independent credentials that are not associated with your UI account.
That's what got me.
And it just says, plug your AP in, scan the QR code on the back in the app, and there you go.
That's what got me, because I was logged into my Unify account in the app, so it just associated all that.
So, yeah, and it says that the AP should be in a powered-on factory state, which the default credentials there, but you can reconfigure them if you know the credentials you set.
Yeah, which I couldn't. The only credentials were my Unify account credentials, which did not work because I tried them.
It would have been a different set of credentials.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can definitely still do it.
I wouldn't recommend it though.
We did it because it was a one-off access point used outside of a network.
Yeah.
It was just like, here's an AP. It gets an IP address from this travel router, and it is broadcast Wi-Fi. It was like a mobile unit.
Yeah, that's too reminiscent of when we were running those Ruckus units here, or that one Ruckus unit upstairs. It was like, oh, and that interface was horrible. And then they updated the interface, and then they were like, hey, how about you try our cloud stuff? It costs X amount of dollars. And I'm like, how about I don't, because Unify doesn't charge me anything. I just have to have hardware to run it on. All right. Well, are you in agreement we'll try to do this about every 2 weeks or so?
Yeah.
Or if you want to do one once a month, that's fine.
Yeah. No, every 2 weeks. I think that's better for me. I need the socialization.
Okay.
I will not be on the next one. I will not be here.
No, mm-hmm. he'll be back.
And nobody wants me to podcast from my living room.
You got the microphone, but you don't have the acoustic. You got an SM, what is it?
It's not the 7B, it's the whatever. It's the
7M?
It's the USB version of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the physical environment is the problem.
The acoustics.
Yeah. The room echoes a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I could probably podcast from my closet, but... Well, I mean, the router's right behind me, so I'd have a great connection.
Well, I mean, if we got started here between 5 and 5:30, that's you're still working at that point.
On Wednesdays, I work.
Yeah.
Because that would be 2 p.m. I mean, it's the scheduling, I shouldn't have meetings those days, but I still have to do my job.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll have maybe... second episode in about 2 weeks. We'll see how that goes. I'm all for it.
You might see me again in 6 months or so if this is still going.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Well, yeah, go to southgeeknews.com. That's where this episode and all the episodes will live. You can also go to tiftonmediaworks.com, which is the network page for all of these podcasts. So anyway, all right. Well, Tyler, thank you for being here, since you were actually here on vacation. Why he comes back to Georgia for vacation, I have no idea, because he always winds up going to work and doing stuff with
You're
me.
Close to Oregon. I'd go to Oregon.
What am I going to do in Oregon?
He doesn't know anybody in Oregon.
I don't know anyone in Oregon.
There's lots of trees.
There's trees where I live. Like, I can go get lost on a mountain.
And mushrooms.
There's mushrooms here.
Not those kinds of mushrooms.
All right, let's get out of here. Okay, so Ben and I will be back next time. We might see Tyler in about 6 months. Anyway, all right, thanks everybody. Bye.
See ya.
This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting tiftonmediaworks.com.